Saturday morning, and usually we're on a Friday night, Ted, so it's a bit different for the captain's table today, but I'm quite looking forward to it. I'm fresh and ready for a good one today. So this gentleman arrived here about a year ago. We got to know him and became a bit of a friend of a lot of people of the show here, and unfortunately he's leaving and heading back to Australia. He's made a big difference in a year, but we're going to talk about this guy's time here, how he found it, and then a little bit what he's doing here. So welcome Josh Mishu to the captain's table.
Thanks for having me, Hammo. Looking forward to having a big chat about it. Here we go.
Sorry, that was a terrible intro, but anyway, it's probably because it is Saturday morning and not a Friday night. But no, Josh, welcome. Really keen to have what you're doing and stuff, because obviously you're heading back to Australia, and you've been in this country for a year, and you're the youngest guy we've had on the captain's table so far. So it's a different medium age group that we're obviously targeting for this one here. So it's good. But want to just talk about yourself and your time here, and then obviously what you're doing there. So let's get back to your time in Australia. You've got a rugby background, which we will talk a lot about today. But you started in Australia. What were you doing over there?
So like most kids in Oz, sport was a massive part of my upbringing and schooling, and gave me a lot of opportunities throughout my whole sort of schooling career and post uni life as well, with a few little tours and getaways and whatnot. But grew up always wanting to be or play at the highest level I could. In a few sports, basketball and rugby were my two main ones, with a bit of athletics here and there. But rugby was my passion going all the way through. Played at school at Newington College in Stanmore. Was there from year 7 to 12.
In Sydney.
Yeah. With always the goal to, you know, try and wear that white jersey, which was the first 15 jersey at the time. And then, as I got into it and started to really, you know, think I had a bit of a chance or opportunity to take it as far as I could, rugby became a massive part of my life, and I always got involved where I could in the community and giving back to the game that really gave me so much when I was coming through, which led me to end up playing for Gordon, which is my local club from mm-hmm. when I played from under eights to, well, when I guess I finished when I was 24 when I did my knee, but we'll get to that later on. But rugby was probably my passion all the way through, and it got me a good opportunity at university at UTS to study and play sport with a great balance. And then mm-hmm. look, here I am in Dubai now, after coaching with a few little programs and, I guess, community action plans in terms of rugby development in Sydney. Apollo knew a mate of a mate that was working with me at the Waratahs at the time and gave me a call, and then ended up just, jumping on the big bird and flying over. So
just going back a step, I mean, rugby, your dream, what you were going to do, you were going to do that your whole time, and then injury hit you. So. Tell us a little bit about that.
As I said, like everyone that plays rugby in Australia and New Zealand, like you always want to play and be a wallaby and whatnot. Yep. I mean, I was always quite realistic with that goal. It was going to take a lot of work and be at the right place at the right time. But, I was playing for Gordon. People say it was arguably probably my best season since I was at school. I was playing pretty well. I just had a season with the NRC and the development squad of the National Rugby Championship with the Rays, and was in pretty good nick, better than I am now. But, I passed the ball, and then I got hit pretty late, and I twisted my knee pretty badly and ended up having a surgery that ended up going for 18 months of rehab. And then I came back round one after that and did the whole thing again. So I was about 24 months on the sideline with a really dodgy knee. And then I just sort of was sitting twiddling my thumbs. Yeah. And obviously, rugby being such a big part of my life, I had that itch to, you know, do something with it or stay around the boys or you know, coach wherever I could. So I started coaching at the few schools in Sydney, and then ended up starting a women's program for Gordon.
Okay.
Just coaching where I could in a few of the rep teams, and it sort of just gave me the opportunity to end up being with the Waratahs development team and coaching the programs coming through. And
so the plan would have been to stay there, keep that going, but then you obviously got the call.
I was happy at the Waratahs. Obviously a massive household name in Australia, if not in the rugby worldwide as such. I was surrounded by a lot of good people with great, you know, great stories and whatnot like that around the traps of rugby. But yeah, I thought I was, you know, at the right time. It was probably, you know, just after COVID had happened for 7-8 months. And I mean, I wasn't stale with the job or anything, but I just thought, I mean, I've got nothing to lose. And if I came over here and really didn't like it, I could always just catch a plane right back. So,
because I'm presuming a lot of coaching would have gone to the UK. That would have been the normal go-to place if people were going to go overseas.
Yeah, I mean, my international experience, everyone always says you need to get a bit of international experience before you become a, you know, big director of rugby or a head coach, whatever like that. A lot of guys these days are going to the UK or Japan to have a season there, or even Italy and France like that. But, I mean, Dubai, I was never on my radar to ever come to Dubai. I mean, I've come through on a plane, but, I never had planned to come coach rugby in a Middle Eastern country, for sure. I mean, I've had a few mates that have visited Dubai and said it's really hot, like really hot. And, you know, I mean, they were here on holiday, not here to play rugby. So I didn't even know rugby was massive part of this sort of, I guess, expat community. But, of course, being an expat, there's sports that expats play. So rugby's been pretty, pretty cool tool being out here as well, because, I mean, I've met so many people, like you mentioned before, the friends and I guess almost family I've made out here have been all through that rugby community, and I can't really thank the game enough for that. And
look, I completely agree, and I mean, if apart from obviously this great event that's been going on here that is obviously we've known for years and years, it's just a networking event, and it's such a everybody is involved. So I completely agree, but probably more. And a big part of the Captain's Table and Dubai Stories is learning a little bit about Dubai. And you've obviously come out here. A lot of the people that we have on board have been here for years and years. You came about. How did you find this place initially, taking away from the rugby side?
Yeah, I mean, at first, like being 25 when I moved over, I found it quite true because obviously a lot of the guys I met initially were here with families and did their own thing on the weekends, were quite busy during the week with their full-time job because everyone's here to work. Yeah. And then the next age bracket was sort of that school leavers age group where a few would stay from uni or a few would go away. So I found myself, you know, a little bit at times alone in terms of not having a massive group of people I could sort of, you know, sit back and grab a coffee with or grab a beer with or whatever it was initially, because there's no one that's really my age. But then as I sort of got into it, I mean, I met so many families that had, you know, were so open to take me in and look after me like their own sort of like kid. So that made it so much easier. I mean, even like when I met you down at Lakes Legends, I've said it so many times, like that touch group is just a cheat code to Dubai. Like you get there, meet 40 guys from 40 different ways of life, and that's like that made it so much easier because I was very worried coming across being by myself, and you know, 14 hours from Sydney to Dubai isn't close to her. Oh, mum, I feel sick. Can you come over? And you know, it didn't really work. So that combined with the COVID risk of things might not be easy to get back.
That's a good point. You came over. So when you came over, was COVID here then, or it had just arrived?
It had just finished here, but just re-kicked off in Australia. So I couldn't, it took me 3 months to get out of the country with my exemption. Like I was meant to come over in January and then didn't get over till just after Easter in April. So, yeah, I mean, there was always that sort of in the back of my mind thinking if I did come here and I didn't like it, I know I said I could fly it back, but I might not be able to fly it back. And at the time, I wouldn't have been able to. So that was always a bit of a, you know, a bit of a, I guess, risk coming over. But, I mean, there's nothing, not one thing I could say I wouldn't do again since being here.
Yeah.
Except probably not drink as many beers with the boys because, you know.
It's happened to a few of us over the time, so I wouldn't quite worry about that. So you came on board, you joined with Apollo Perilini, AP, friend of the show, and got directly involved with his organisation. Tell us a little bit about that part.
Yeah, so, I mean, as you said, like, what did I expect of Dubai? The one thing I knew about Dubai in rugby is I knew Apollo Perilini. I knew who he was. I watched his, like, you know, his highlights when I was a bit younger, watching rugby league, which is massive in Australia. And I had a few guys, especially my dad and his sort of mates, knew who the Terminator was at the time. So they were pretty pretty keen for me to come over here and, like, what an opportunity it is to learn off him. And, you know, he's been here for 12, 13 years now, so he knows what goes on. He knows people, and like working for his academy has been great because, you know, he gave me free reins of the program, I guess, with his watchful eye, but the trust to run it how we wanted to run it, which has been great because it's been such a learning experience. Like the age range is from 4 to 18, elite development, beginners, you know, girls that are new to the game, girls that have played before, which is great. Like the variety of coaching here can only, you can only learn from that, then take it back from when I go to the city. It'll be so much, I guess, so much easier to, I guess, relate to the new levels of the sport and the different ability levels. So, yeah, it's been great working for the academy. And I mean, I've made some great friends through that as well, like Pat Benson and Fabian Juries, who are quite household names here. Like everyone knows who they are in the coaching world. And it's been great to make mates with them. And I've worked with the six coaches that are all from different clubs. Like you've got Maddie from the Dragons, Pat from the Canes, Fabian's at Abu Dhabi in LA. And like, it's been so good to have those guys in my pocket and then know 40 guys from each rugby club straight away. So that's been cool. And it's been cool to get a different, I guess, set of eyes from a lot of the coaches. That's been the best part about working in such a tight group. Like we're all mates and, you know, we're all working the same thing, which is to grow rugby in the UAE.
So is the standard of rugby, how would you, I mean, because years gone by, when I came over here 20 years ago, people would do a bit of time and then maybe do their school and then go off to university. That's sort of changing a bit now. People are staying, going on, doing things like that. How is the standard of rugby in comparison to, say, Australia or the UK?
Yeah, that's probably the most common question I get asked is how the kids would go back home or in New Zealand and stuff like that. I mean, it's a funny one. Like you look at the players, the top players here, you know, your TJs, your Max Prestons, those kids there, if you chuck them in the system in Sydney and whatnot, I'd be happy to think that they'd go as far as they could in the same sort of environment. Whereas here, the only thing they might struggle with is the amount of games against better opposition. So the players here, that player pool are definitely as good as the player pool back in other countries. Like you look at the players that have gone across and done really well, like the Tom Burtons, he's gone across, made English schools. Like,
brilliant.
He's here, but he's made England schools. Like he's still good enough to do that. So I think if they went back, they'd be fine. Yep. I think the thing that they can sometimes struggle with is that because there's not 50 Max Prestons or TJs, if you know what I mean, there's only 10, 15. So there's, you know, five in each team. So you might have a competitive game here and there, but the across the, say, Sydney, you've got 10 teams that play at that level with those those players, so they always get better from the challenge, whereas I think sometimes here they might be limited to the amount of games that they can develop in. I mean, they've gotten a lot of games, but it's just whether the across the board, the top level's probably not as high based on the population of how many players are playing here.
Got it.
But, I mean, individually, like, yeah, definitely I think they're as good as the kids back home. And I just think, the more that they can put themselves in environments to play better opposition, the better they'll get. And they'll get that eventually. I mean, a lot of the kids aren't planning to stay at university in Dubai. Most of them go away, and it will be a great eye-opener for all of them to see if they can crack it. If that's what they want to do, they'll find out, you know, it'll be two ways. It'll be either too hard or a great motivator, or they'll probably do really well. So there's three. So, you know, motivator, too hard, or get on with the job and keep going. But, individually I think they are good enough. There's just probably not as many here than there is back home in New Zealand or Sydney.
And, of course, you know, there is still the big chunk that leave when they hit university. They head overseas and things like that. Okay, there's a few that stay, but not so many. And also you're involved in women's rugby as well?
Yep. So when I got here, it's a good story, actually. I was at Sports City with Apollo and we was coaching and I was walking past this team. They didn't have a coach. And I said, oh, I'm just going to go ask if they want a hand because there's like 20 of the girls and they've got no coach. And I knew I'd met Helen the week before with Apollo. So I walked over and said, oh, do you guys need a hand running this? I mean, I know you've probably got it under control, but do you need a coach? I've just got here. I think it was my second week. Just got here. I was in flip flops and a singlet, and they're like, "Oh yeah, if you want," sort of like, "Oh yeah, okay, whatever." Sort of shoved it away. But then I ended up coaching them for the end of last season after the COVID season had happened. So I coached them for I think 4 or 5 weeks. Played two tournaments. We did quite well, which is always a bonus. And then we were walking off after the season, and Helen was like, oh, you're going to coach next year? And I said, oh, yeah, do you need a coach? And she said, oh, I'll need an application. And I said, oh, God, I don't really want to send my CV. I mean, come on. just coached you. Sure, there's a bit of, you know, credits there. But yeah. After that, about 3 months later, we all sort of got together and had a plan to take on the season with the Dubai Falcons as the Knights Eagles had just folded. So, we went off to the Falcons, which was pretty cool because Leon, who's the president of the Falcons, again, gave us full range to, you know, do whatever we wanted to do to make it work, which was great because to feel supported as a coach and a player is the best way to feel when you're trying to achieve something special. So we got together and I actually put a little bit of a PowerPoint together because, you know, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it the best of my ability. And we sat down at the Radisson Red and I put up on the slideshow that if we follow this plan in Dubai Sevens, we'll be champions. And they, some of them laughed it off. Some of them didn't really believe it. But in the back of my mind, I personally thought we could definitely achieve it if we got into the right mindset and the right sort of structure to play arguably probably the best team of the last 3 years, which is the Dubai Hurricanes women's team with Benji, who's at the head of that. And they've got a great program. They're great athletes. And we knew that it was going to be hopefully us versus them in the final at Dubai Sevens. And, I mean, as a group, we got together went under the radar a bit, trained hard, and then got to the final, where you got to be in the contest to win it. You got to be in the final, and we got there. And I mean, the Hurricanes just had a pretty tough semi-final going to extra time, and we got on top of them 19-14 or 19-12, I think it was in the end. But I mean, it was a great game, and like the whole season, we've had, you know, win loss with the Canes, and it's just a great little rivalry. And I think for women's rugby, especially if the women's game is really strong, then the younger under-19s girls division's strong, and if then they're strong, then the UAE 18s will be strong. And if the UAE 18s are strong, then you get more funny and the whole thing like that. It works on a bit of a, you know, snowball effect. So I really love being involved with the Falcons. I made some great mates from coaching there. Actually, Helen, little shout out, it's her birthday.
Happy birthday, Helen.
It's not a birthday, sorry, it's a baby shower.
Oh, right.
Baby shower today. Okay. So, happy baby shower. I was actually the first person to know, so it felt pretty special.
There you go, write that down, Ted. But, baby shower, the first one we've had on here.
I've made some great mates, and I've got a few of them that have worked in the government sort of system, and like teachers and swimming coaches, the whole thing. So, it's been nice to have a different group of mates that are away from. Sure. In a way, rugby, because they're not all my mates are rugby guys, and that's why I meet them. Whereas these guys, I coach them, but their lives are completely different to what I'm doing. So it's been nice to, you know, get another pool of mates.
So all the rugby here it's all amateur. So everybody's got a job. Is there any professional players that are in UAE?
It is technically amateur. I mean, there's a few clubs that have financial assistance with housing and a bit of extra work. And, I mean, a few of the clubs have started to bring a few players across, which is, I mean, great because that will only encourage other teams to do the same, because if one club's doing something, then everyone wants to be involved or on the same level, give yourself the same opportunity. But, I mean, I think I like the idea of it being amateur out here. It's such a nice – like, everyone plays in such a nice spirit of the game. And, although I didn't end up getting to, I didn't play in a team. I played at the Sevens for Desk Old Boys with Cliffy, and that was just such a good weekend playing. I mean, I was coaching as well, but playing was just nice. Like, no one was playing with malice or trying to kill you.
Yeah,
it was just like a nice sort of
different feeling to what you'd maybe experienced before.
I mean, but in saying that, the top level here, the effort's there, the intensity's there, the coaches are educated, like. I mean, Matt Putes is one of the best coaches I've worked with here, and he's at the he's at the Sharks now, but with Dylan Hartley. But they've got the coaches here to make the programs strong, and the intensity and effort and commitment from the players is there. It's just I think it's the hardest thing for them to do is demand 3 or 4 sessions a week from someone working here, because as I said, everyone's here working. No one's gone, oh, I might come and have a rugby career in Dubai. It's more. Yeah, right. Come here for work and I'll play with rugby, have a social life. So, it is amateur, but it's a nice amateur. Like, it's just good to watch, and the clubs are really homely, and, you know, everyone's always around the club after the game, and, you know, it's a nice tight environment, is what the rugby world is. And that's what I've always said, rugby takes you everywhere, doesn't it?
So it's always been the way. And I moved over
in the 90s to Saudi Arabia, and that was the connection that you got from home, was joining the local rugby club. And I think it's always been said that if you want to get into the Middle East, if you're here, go and find the rugby club, and you'll find a home. So I think it's great. I do agree. You touched on Dylan Hartley. I mean, a big signing this week for the Sharks, for a director of rugby. And going back to what you said before, I mean, you are right. People are working. There's a lot of pressure on work these days, and you've got to do it. How can what would be his strategy to take it higher?
I think if you get players, you want to buy players or contract players, you're going to need the that cheeky thing called money to get them here. And I think Dylan's sort of role is quite invaluable because he's such a household name. Yeah. I mean, he's played 96, 97 games for England.
Kiwi, isn't he?
Kiwi born.
Oh, right.
Kiwi born.
Yeah, right, okay, just wondering about that.
But in the rose white,
right? Yeah, sure.
But I mean, like, he'll bring in his. I think his major pull will be getting sponsors on board, because they'll go, oh,
very good.
What a name!
Yeah, let's get involved. Sure.
Which again, Sharks are in the Div 1, so under the Premiership level, as such. But I mean, it won't take long for teams like that to catch on, because if a few of the ex-players are coming out here and, you know, growing the game as well as they can, then you pick up five or six players and they'll probably be on the same level as the Championship, or the Premiership as it's called, to play out here. So, I mean, I think if clubs, the clubs want to take it seriously in contract players, it's just going to need money. And that's why I think big names or good CEOs of the clubs will know how to find sponsors and make it work if they want to. It's not something that can happen overnight, obviously. Yeah. You can't say, I need, I don't know, 500,000 dirhams or whatever to make it work. You have to work for it. But I think if they want to make it work, it's possible to get the players here if they have the money.
Because
there has been player managers come in the past that haven't really lasted long, haven't there? There's been a few that sort of come and go very quickly.
I think it's because it's so sink or swim. So if you pour a lot of money into something and it's a flop here, I don't think it's very forgiving. Like, there's no time to... Sure. Oh, just go over here because, you know, you're on your visas, you've got your costs, everything like that. It's just...
And then I presume also, you know, international player turning up, there are a few here. So it's not like, oh my goodness, he's here. You know, you probably make a team of ex-international rugby players that have set up base here,
I think you're right there. I mean, there's so many that come here because it's so close to the UK, and it's probably not a bad place to park up and finish off. Or retire as such. Like, it's always sunny.
Yeah.
It's got a good culture in sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a lot of opportunity to do other things out here, business-wise and, I guess, growth-wise. But, yeah, you are right. I mean, there's so many that come through, and it would be extremely tough to start your own thing, I guess. But I mean, if you're a good person, you'll probably make it work. So,
Exactly.
I wish all the best of the people that have come through.
Exactly.
And you're right.
And what you were saying before we started with APs, it's the camp or the rugby directory, it's full, isn't it?
At the moment, it's been great to have a term where we're back at full numbers as such, and flying through sessions, because, I mean, it was quite tough after COVID with everything so unknown and restrictions and...
So the kids are coming through. The numbers of kids are coming through.
And
we had last week, we had Stephen Munners from Vikings, and he was talking about there's more kids in schools, I think expat kids, than there's ever been in this town now. So the kids are here. And, I mean, it's pretty rough everywhere else in the world, so it's not a bad place. There's a lot of families moving here, so it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah, I was speaking to Eddie Batts about this the other day. Yeah. The families are staying here now, which is driving everything to grow. Yeah. You need things to grow to have more people here.
Sure.
I mean, if families are staying here, they're going to be kids that need to play sport, and if it's rugby, football, or basketball, whatever it is, there needs to be the opportunity for them to play it. So if that's the case, they need to have spaces where they can go and get their sport done. So I think that's why for us and Munners with the Vikings, it's been good to finally get COVID out of the way and have a fresh term where we can sort of all build without having to worry about wearing a mask for 3.5 meters away, or sanitizing every 36 minutes in the second, or whatever it is, you know. So it's been tough at first, but I mean, now that it's all sort of hopefully washed away, and the academy is going really well, so hopefully we can stay strong for the future and just keep rolling through with it.
So that's something I'd like to bring up. You know, gentleman of yourself in that sort of mid-20s, you know, peak of your life. What is the difference between Dubai and Sydney?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty full on. Like getting here and it being 42 degrees and humid as hell was definitely a shock to the system, especially with the leaving party I had before I got here, which sweated out pretty quickly when I got here. There's a few things that the cultural change. At first, I didn't really know what it would be like. I've never really been to Dubai. I've heard things about it being the Middle East and it being very Islamic and a Muslim culture. I thought I'd probably be struggling to fit in and stuff because I thought from what I've the stereotype is that everyone here is quite religious and you know it's quite a hidden gem and drinking's not allowed and
so many it's interesting because we keep hearing this and it's probably one of the biggest secrets out that of what it is and I mean you talk about the brunch culture which we've got here. And that's probably a question. How would that the brunch culture here, which is normal practice, now how would that go down in Sydney? Because I know what it would happen in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be pretty.
No, I completely agree with you. I think for $120 to $180 max for unlimited drinks and food, which is, you know, pretty good going, I think you'd have a pretty messy actually, every single place would be pretty messy.
Yeah.
I think it would just be out of control.
So it's interesting how this place has developed this sort of art there.
Yeah, I had a chat about this the other day. You know, I think it is because everyone thinks of the rules and the laws being so strict.
Yeah.
I think they get messy here, but then they have to pull themselves together on the streets. Otherwise, off they go to,
right.
Wherever they go.
Yeah.
But I think if in Sydney is the problem is especially if it was a brunch there, you'd get pissed up and then something would go wrong. Maybe someone didn't open the door for you and it would just be too messy to control it. And I think it'd just get out of hand. Whereas here, I think the fear of doing something wrong and getting in trouble is always in the back of your mind. So I think that's why it's quite tame. And I mean, it's not really tame, but you're tame when you're outdoors, which makes it seem like there's not much going on. Whereas in Sydney and Kiwi land, it would just be,
It would be different.
Messy.
I think it would be different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's. And what about also just in your mates and what they're doing and that kind of thing back home compared to say the same sort of crew that is here.
Yeah, I mean a lot of my mates back home. It's weird. I feel because here the labor is done differently. A lot of my mates are tradesmen. And very working class. Level and you know plumbers, landscapers, brickies, the whole lot. A lot of my mates from where I was living are in that sort of area. A few are teachers. My brother actually just got a role with Snapchat, so that's a bit different.
Is that still going? I thought
I have no idea how to use Snapchat. All I know is I have one. I'm locked out of it. I mean, there's a few of my mates are doing a lot of different things. I guess it's hard for me to sort of judge here because a lot of my mates out here. A teacher, so and I mean Georgie Cliff, who's my roommate, he's probably one of my best mates out here, if not probably is the best. He's director of rugby at a desk, so he runs his program there, which is pretty similar to what I'm sort of doing with the academy, and that's how we've sort of got together. But I mean, out here, a lot of the guys I met are teachers, so I mean they live a great life. They teach for 12, 14 weeks, have a couple of weeks off, 12, 14, have a few weeks off. Whereas in Sydney, I think. The difference is because when they finish work and they've got holidays, they can't just get on a plane and go to Europe. Whereas here, you have a week off. Like George and I did last week, had a week off, went off to Germany for a few days and whatnot. And it's just so easy here that I think the lifestyle's a little bit different because they've got the opportunity to jump on a plane and go wherever pretty quickly. Whereas if we're going to, let's just say the UK from Sydney, that's a 24-hour sort of
And it's pretty hard. Would you agree it's pretty hard to sort of for guys at home to comprehend the sort of things that we sort of take for granted, which is that going off to Germany for the weekend and things like
I think so. I mean I have done a lot of travel growing up in my late teens to early 20s with a few mates and whatnot. And I saved every penny for it, may I say. And spent every penny for it. But, I mean, coming here, the fact that, like, we on the Friday thought, oh, let's go away for Eid.
Yeah.
And we booked a flight within 2 hours.
Sure.
Definitely makes it a lot easier than sitting at home in Sydney and going, oh, could go to Italy, but I'll have to do it in this week in 6 months because I've got 10 days off there, not right. You know, four. Whereas here, the ease of just going, oh, off we go. Even like when you go to destinations like Rack or Mastermind, like you did with the Fan Bam last week.
Yeah.
It's just so easy.
Exactly.
And if you drive somewhere for 2 hours, you're in a completely different area. Whereas in Sydney, you drive 2 hours, you're still in Sydney.
Right, sure.
So, I mean, that's a different ballpark, I guess, in terms of the travel and how easy it is here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm pretty happy. I've got to do a few trips with a few mates exactly. here and enjoyed the ease of being able to travel. Yeah, everyone will always say you wish you could do more, but I was pretty happy and loved it, yeah.
It is what it is. Good. So moving ahead, you've decided to head home, which is sad for us, but great for you. Tell us a little bit about what you're heading to.
I mean, as you said, it is sad. I didn't necessarily look to leave. Same sort of thing. I was given an opportunity, and I mean, I've said to Paul, I'm so thankful for everything he's done and what I've learned. But it's one of those opportunities you just can't turn down. And who knows? I mean, it might eventuate to something else, or I might be back here sooner rather than later. But I'm going to go back to the Gordon Rugby Football Club, which is who I played for, and obviously was heavily involved with before I left as the director of Pathways, which essentially is the management of the representative pathway from under 14s to 18s, and then assisting the coach that's there at the moment with the Colts and recruitment and retention, and I guess helping with the vision of where the club wants to go alongside the coaches and players that are there now. So hopefully, I mean, I'm excited. I've been working a little bit here, getting a few of the boys to come across as well. So it'd be a nice way to create a pathway for school leavers here to come back to Australia, whether they're residents or have passports or just want to try something new for university.
Sure.
Because Gordon's major sponsor is UTS, which is one of the big unis in Sydney. It's a great, I guess, opportunity for players if they want to study and play rugby in Sydney or Australia. It can be an option for them.
Would they have to be Australian passport holders?
No, they can be whatever. It's just the fees obviously would change a little bit in terms of international fees and domestic. Sure. But I said to a few of the boys I've been working with out here, I mean, I'd love them to come to Gordon, obviously.
Of course.
But again, I'm there for them and what's best for them. So if they want to go to Queensland or Melbourne or whatever it is, I'm happy to help them get there and always be someone in their corner they can rely on for advice or a bit of guidance. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a cool opportunity. It's going to be a great way to get back to Sydney and hit the ground running.
And then, as you say, potentially, because obviously you've got some eyes on some potential now, but coming back every year and just maybe around the time that this stuff's going on, I don't know, and see what else is out there.
Yeah, I think that's the best plan, business expense, I reckon, to buy a Sevens ticket, flight, hotel.
Yeah, and just see the calibre that's out there.
Yeah, chuck it on there and then, come over and watch the boys and girls play because we've got girls club as well.
Yeah.
It goes into a women's team, obviously, as well. So we've got plenty of pathways and programs where we need to, we want to expand it and grow it. And I think, Dubai is going to be one of those places that could be a pretty regular stop for myself. Yeah. As we said before, the talent's here.
Yeah, right.
It's just about getting them into the right situation that suits them. Like, there's no point of bringing them over and throwing them in the deep end if things aren't right or aren't going to work. But, I mean, that's what my job's going to be, is to try and make things work. And that's, if I get that and they're happy, then everyone's happy and I look good.
Well, nothing's final because, they can go away, then come back.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's a lot of kids doing that now.
Yeah.
Second generation, third generation expat kids, when in the old days they just disappeared because there was no opportunities. Now there's plenty of opportunities. Go away, do some time, come back.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant. Oh, well, that's good. So it's really just a to be continued then.
Yeah, I think we'll have to catch up in 6 months' time and and revisit the whole plan. And
the captain's table will be here, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
We're never going to move.
So definitely.
Oh, that's great. So, Josh, thanks for coming on. I know it's you're a busy time with only a couple more days before you head off, but thanks for making the time for coming on the table.
No worries. And happy birthday, Cookie. I know you're 32 or something this week. So
birthdays, baby showers. Gee, you know everything. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Good.